down at the woman, two fingers pressed to her lips, and a look about her that feels as though she might come untethered at a breeze. Bourbon lets me go just long enough to get his pistol against my spine and take a step back from the vault. I can hear him rooting around in his coat. Then his arm enters my eyeline. He's clutching a great knife, which he extends to Helena. Do it, then. She doesn't take it. You have the key. I'm finished. Our agreement is complete once I have the heart. Your father can stay in prison if you retreat now.
I won't.
Bourbon taps the blade of the knife flat against the rim of the drawer. It rings like a tuning fork. Consider your actions, Condessa, before you cross me.
That's my mother.
Her voice tears on the last word, a ragged note of grief like ripped paper. She stumbles back from the tomb, one hand pressed over her mouth. Bourbon's pistol nudges me in the back.
Fine. You do it, Montague.
Oh, dear God, no. No, thank you.
Go on.
No, please, I can't.
Here.
He reaches in with the butt of his pistol and cracks the woman across the chest so that her rib cage collapses with a sound like dropping a stone on a sheet of ice. Helena flinches like it's she who's been broken open, both her hands flying up to press against her own heart.
Let me start things off for you, he says.
I'm shaking like mad at just the thought, but it isn't really a choice with that pistol again to my back and both Percy and Felicity standing there. My fear is less that he's going to shoot me and more that he'll turn it on them. All my soft spots are exposed. Another gust of the hot air hits me. Hot air that's rising off her, I realize, pulsing from that glowing heart as it beats. My breath sticks in my chest. Then Felicity says, I'll do it. Bourbon regards her as she extends a steady hand. I can, she says. Better than Monty. Give it here and I'll do it for you. Pistol still pressed into my back, Bourbon hands the knife over, and she steps up to the drawer right across from me. Her gaze flits up to mine. Help me, she says quietly, then presses the tip of the blade into the hollow of Helena's mother's throat. The skin peels away with little resistance, like paper off a wrapped package. I hold the flaps in place while Felicity wedges her fingers into the sternum, a jagged crack like a lightning strike down the center from Bourbon's blow, and gives a sharp wrench with more strength than I knew she had in her. There's another crack as the ribs snap from the spine. Helena lets out a soft sob. And there is the heart, raw and red, not so much beating as pulsing like it's a throbbing wound. As I hold the skin in place, Felicity makes quick work peeling back the withered husks of the lungs and severing the veins. Each one breaks from the heart with a sound like delicate glass, and with each, the rest of the mother's body seems to grow less and less alive, as though her whole being is distilled and packed inside her heart. Felicity forces her hands between the ribs and lifts the heart out, careful as if handling a newborn kitten. I can feel the heat radiating off it, and Felicity's arms bow against its weight like it's a precious stone or the anchor of a ship. Felicity holds it out to Bourbon, but he steps back, dragging me with him, like he's white-livered at the thought of being too near it.
Give it to Condessa Robles, he says. She'll carry it from here.
Helena steps up to meet Felicity, in the empty space between Bourbon and me and Percy. Helena takes the heart between her cupped hands so very carefully, like it's fragile and alive. Her fingers curl around the edges, and a transparent bead of something that is half-blood, half-light, slides from the surface and down the back of her hand. Helena starts to say something, but Bourbon grabs me from behind and yanks me to him as a shield again. Percy has been inching forward, reaching out like he might pull me to his side as soon as the exchange was made, but he freezes, hand still raised. Felicity darts back to his side, arms wrapped around herself. She leaves fingerprints of the strange shimmering residue from the heart along her sleeves.
You've what you want, Percy calls. Please, let Monty go.
Then once more for good measure, please!
No. I'm afraid there was never a chance the three of you would leave this place alive. Surely you knew that when you came.
This was my fault, I say. I feel like I'm sagging into him, my strength waning, and all my fight to survive eaten up. Let them go. I stole the box.
His arm tightens around my throat, choking out my words.
Sorry, my lord. Condessa, back out in the tunnel. Since you're so keen to keep blood off your hands, we'll seal them in, and they can sink with the island.
Helena hasn't taken her eyes off the heart, still cradled between her hands. It casts a faint sheen upon her face from below.
Condessa!
Bourbon snaps. Helena raises her face, though it's not the Duke she looks to, it's Percy.
Do you want this? She asks him softly.
Condessa, the Duke says again.
Do you? She asks.
No, Percy replies. Bourbon seems to realize what she's about to do the moment before she moves. As Helena holds the heart toward one of the bowls of flame, he lunges forward, ready to snatch it from her, but finds I'm rather in his way. Our legs tangle up and he slams into me, sending us both to the ground. My shoulder strikes the stone with a thwack, the pain from impact doubled when he lands atop me. Bourbon tries to wrestle himself free, his foot ramming me so hard in the stomach I lose my breath, and makes a scramble forward on his hands and knees. He's clawing toward Helena, and she's reaching for the flames, the heart between her hands. He's going to grab her, or it, before she can destroy it, and part of me wants to as well. Reach out and catch that precious thing between my hands and claim it. But instead, I do the only thing I can think of to stop the Duke. I make a fist and wind up, then, at the last second, untuck my thumb from inside my palm and punch him straight in the nose. And it still bloody well hurts, but it's loads more effective this time. I feel cartilage crumple beneath my fingers. Bourbon howls with pain as blood pours down his face and splatters the stone. And Helena seizes her moment with maximum panache. She doesn't just toss, she flings her mother's heart into the fire. It catches at once, like it's been soaked in alcohol. A column of flame jets upward, so searing we all put up our hands except the Duke. He's still got blood pouring over his lips and dribbling down his chin, but he's clawing his way forward, like he might pull the remnant from the flames and salvage it. The heat from it blisters his forehead. I grab him by the coat, trying to yank him backward, and he growls in frustration, taking a blind swipe in my direction with his pistol. The barrel knocks me above the ear, and then he fires, right up against my face. There's a fantastic bang, and I'm slammed into the floor, my head burning. For a moment, I can't hear a thing but a metallic hum. A torrent of sparks rises from the fire where Helena dropped the heart, like a weld struck when nearly molten. Then another blast of hot air explodes through the room, full of ash and spark, and a glittering dust that smells of bone and chemicals. The walls begin to tremble, pebbles sifting from the ceiling and showering us. The lights dance. One of the iron bowls topples, spilling lit kindling. The sound starts to return, though it's smothered. A low rumble begins to underscore the whistling in my ear. Felicity's lips are moving, and I hear her cry, "The tunnel!" I'm trying to get to my feet and finding it a great deal more difficult than it should be. Percy grabs me by the arm and hauls me up, pulling me after him, one arm wrapped around my waist and Felicity ahead. She wrenches the door open and the three of us clamber through, just as a pillar on the other side tumbles like a felled tree, bones cascading. Percy yanks me out of the way before I'm struck by them. Helena is close behind us, but in the doorway she turns and screams, "Come on!" I don't know who she's talking to until I turn, and there's Bourbon still on his knees before the fire, clawing at the flames and trying to pry free any fragment of the heart that might be left. Flames are climbing up his sleeves, leaping to his hair, and he's screaming, but he doesn't stop. "Come on!" Helena shouts again. "It's gone! Come on now!" But he isn't coming. He's burying himself in this tomb. The doorway crumbles. And Felicity, bless, for I'd not an ounce of Christian charity left in me for the pair of them, grabs Helena and drags her away. The four of us hurtle down the passageway, the walls buckling around us. Even the air seems to be vibrating, split by the sound of all those bones cracking and folding and collapsing into splinters and sand. The tunnel is growing so thick with dust it's getting hard to breathe. At the bend, the wired capuchin leers at us as we pass. "Soon you shall be," flashes before the sign hits the ground and snaps in half. At the base of the tunnel, Helena pulls ahead of us, flinging herself up the stairs and out of sight. By the time we emerge into the chapel, she's already splashing down the dock where our gondola was tied off. Another boat is moored beside it. Helena shoves the gondola off from the dock, burying her pole in the water and riding the current away. As we follow her, there's a crack like thunder behind us, and a piece of the chapel wall collapses. The dusty wind of it strikes our backs, and we all stagger. The floodwater pitches into waves. The vibrations of the stones tumbling into the lagoon are raising ripples around our legs, the deck tipping badly enough that I tip with it, sideways into Percy, so that the water soaks me up to my waist. He somehow manages to stay on his feet. Perhaps, I realize, because it's only me that's tipping. I'm amazed to discover my limbs have almost entirely ceased to function. The only reason I'm still upright seems to be that Percy's holding me, and my head is feeling strange, like it's filling up with thick water. My ears are ringing. Percy hoists me into the boat after Felicity, then gives us a good shove off from the dock before he leaps in after. The island rumbles again, and a shower of stones scratches at my face as another wall of the chapel goes into the lagoon. "Monty!" Percy grabs my shoulder, and I have a sense he's said my name a few times without a response. He's leaning over me, his face smeared with soot and dust, and a faint shine left by the alchemical heart. "Monty, talk to me, say something!" I raise one hand to the side of my face to find it hot and damp. "I think I've been shot." "You have not been shot." Felicity pulls the oars into the boat long enough to peel my fingers away from my head. Her face goes pale. Then she presses my hand back where it was. "Fine, you've been shot." Of course, this would be the one time I'm right about my injuries. "It isn't bad," she says, but she sounds as though she's working so hard to be calm about it that I know she's lying. That, and I can feel my heartbeat all the way through my skull, which is alarming. It's like swallowing my pulse. "Keep your hand on it," Felicity cries as my hand slips. "Tight, Monty. Press it tight." Percy grabs my hand and presses both our palms over top of each other to the side of my head. Blood is bubbling up against my palm and running in thin rivulets between my fingers and down my arm. It's pathetic how dizzy the sight of my own blood makes me. Or perhaps that's got to do with the fact that it seems to be abandoning me en masse. I'm starting to breathe faster without meaning to. The air is feeling very thin. Then Felicity shouts, "There they are!" And through the grey mist, the Eleftheria looms like the silhouette of a cathedral against the sunrise, two catboats chasing lamely behind. Felicity drops the oars and steers us up against the prow until two ropes unfurl from the deck. She takes one and Percy the other, his hands slick with blood as he ties us off. The ropes turn scarlet between his palms. "Heave!" comes a shout from above, and the boat jerks upward until we are spat out onto the deck, which is looking more underwater than the chapel. I'm trying to stay awake, but my head keeps sinking, like I'm dozing. Someone's pressing something against the side of my face, and, holy Mary, it's really hurting. The sailors are all clustered around us. Every boot on the planking rattles me to my teeth. "Christ! A lot of blood! On his side! Is he breathing? I don't think he's..."
"Let Miss Montague through!" Scipio's voice roars over them.
"Monty!" Percy is shaking me. It sounds like he's speaking from the bottom of a well. He's right beside me, holding me steady on my side. "Monty, look at me. Try to stay awake. Keep your eyes open. Come on, darling. Look at me, please." He's got blood all over his shirt, the wet material clinging to his chest.
"You're hurt," I murmur, raising a hand to pluck at it.
"No, I'm not." Oh, so that's my blood. Fantastic. A pathetic whimper escapes me.
It's all right, he says softly, his other hand twining with mine. Breathe. You're going to be fine. Please, breathe.
And then the next thing I know, I'm flat on my back on the bunk in Scipio's cabin, the lantern overhead swinging as the ship cants. Percy is on the floor beside me with his legs drawn to his chest, asleep with his forehead against his knees and his hand in mine. The angle of it twists my wrist up, but I don't move. My vision is cloudy, and one of my ears is still filled with that metallic ringing. The entirety of my face is throbbing, and when I shift, pain rips through my head and cracks behind my eyes like the gunshot all over again. I cry out without meaning to, and Percy bolts upright.
Monty!
Hello, darling.
My voice is rusty, and the skin along the right side of my face pulls when I speak.
You're awake.
He hoists himself into a crouch beside me and touches his thumb to my chin. His voice is muffled, like I'm hearing him with a pillow over my head. If I wasn't looking straight at him, watching his lips form the words, I couldn't be certain where they were coming from.
You look worried, I murmur.
Yes, well, that's your fault, you know.
I laugh weakly, but it turns into rather more of a wince.
I think I was shot.
You very nearly were.
Very nearly? That's less harrowing than I hoped.
I raise my hand, which is heavier than it should be, and touch my head. There's a tight wrap of bandages all the way around it, and the spot over my ear is damp.
Does it look bad?
It doesn't look very good, he says carefully. It's burned and swollen, but that'll fade. Though the ear is a bit...
He tugs on his own lobe.
A bit what?
Gone. It's a bit... gone.
You mean I've only got...
Don't touch it.
Percy catches my hand before I can rip the bandages off.
I've only one ear left.
Most of it got blown off and the rest was sort of... mangled. Felicity took it off cleanly. You're lucky the powder didn't wreck your eyes as well.
Where is Felicity?
She's fine.
No, where is she? I'll rip her ear off and see how she likes it.
I should tell her you're awake. She's been going mad over you. Didn't know Felicity liked you so much until you nearly kicked it.
Nothing brings a pair closer than a near-death experience, I suppose.
Percy rubs his temples. I can tell he's trying to play this off as casual, though I must have been right bad off if it's sitting this heavy on him.
When Scipio told us Bourbon had you, and then you were shot...
Very nearly shot.
Zounds, Monty, what if the last thing we ever did was fight?
Do you have better last words to me that you'd like to deliver? You could share them now, in case things go south again.
He puts his hand atop my knee, the blanket between us, and I suddenly feel like I'm tempting fate with this question. But then he says,
I'm sorry.
Oh, darling, I return, stacking my hand over his. You haven't a thing to be sorry for.
I'm still not hearing right, and it's beginning to shift from irritating to worrisome. Percy's voice is stifled, and my own is echoing backward in my head, like I'm speaking in a vast, empty hall. Maybe it's the bandages that have everything muted, but when I snap my fingers next to my right ear, the one that is apparently no longer with me, it sounds like it's coming from the other side of the room. Which is when I realize... I try to sit up and the room tips. It nearly knocks me straight back out. Percy grabs me before I keel over.
Easy.
I manage to get one hand pressed over the ear I've got left, closing it up, and then snap again beside the missing one, and it's... nothing. No sound at all. Percy is watching me, his eyebrows knit.
Is it gone?
He asks. My throat's feeling a bit wobbly. So I just nod. It's hitting me a lot harder than I feel it should. I'm quite lucky to be alive. Shouldn't be crying over losing the hearing in one ear. Percy seems to understand it, though. He slides an arm around my waist and lets me press the side of my face that isn't minced meat against his chest.
I'm sorry, he says.
It's all right,
I murmur, trying to sound mild as milk about it and failing spectacularly. Could have been worse.
Yes, could have been so much worse.
He laughs, the way Percy always does when something's got him properly spooked. I can feel his heart beating through his chest right up against mine.
I'm just so, so glad you're alive.
His voice breaks a little on the last word, and he touches his lips to the top of my head. So soft, it's almost imaginary. And I'm not certain what that is. But it isn't nothing. Oya Santorini. 30. After 7 days at sea, the Eleftheria makes port in the small, mountainous island of Santorini in the Aegean Sea. Its cliffsides are canvassed in cave houses, burrowed into the volcanic stone, and whitewashed buildings domed in cobalt blue. Thatch-roofed windmills jut between them, their blades like rays of sunshine. The sun itself is a vivid thing, brighter in this crook of the continent. The whole world looks somehow brighter. Scipio and his men stay with their ship, but he helps Felicity, Percy, and me find a flat on the cliffs above the sea, with its own cobalt dome and stone floors, and a landlord friendly with the captain and willing to take our Italian lira. The rooms are sun-warmed and clear, the courtyard crowded with fig trees around a small laughing fountain. The sea seems everywhere. The first few days feel packed and frantic, full of learning the land and selling the cargo, and arranging supplies and repairs for the ship, and looking for a proper doctor who speaks at least one of the languages we do and who can take a look at my face. It's mostly been Felicity tending to me while we sailed from Venice. My hearing seems to have no inclination to return, and along with the bullet clipping my ear, I caught the discharge from the gun, which left thick, speckled burns in random patches from my hairline to my collarbone. I haven't seen myself in a glass yet, but I have a suspicion that the right half of my face will be off-colored and scarred for the remainder of my life. My best feature, ruined. I don't think you can claim your entire face as your best feature, Felicity tells me. You're meant to be a bit more discerning. We're at the table in the courtyard, Felicity unwrapping the bandages from my head so she can get a look at how everything is healing. When the Greek doctor came, every instruction he gave was met by a, "Yes, I know," from Felicity, though Scipio didn't translate those for him. He also complimented Felicity on her stitching, which she's been crowing over ever since. "Well, it's difficult to choose when you have so many good options." I swipe my hand at my right side, forgetting momentarily that the empty buzz that has replaced all other sound isn't an insect I can swat away. Fortunately, my right ear was the less handsome of the pair. Fortunately, or else you'd be devastated. A few months ago I might have been. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't mourning the loss a wee bit. But we're all still alive and still together, so instead it feels strangely like luck. Felicity lets the bandages fall into her lap atop her surgical kit, then does a careful inventory of my disfigurement. "It looks better." Your telling pause disagrees. "It does. The swelling's gone down, though we need to watch for infection. Let's leave the bandages off for a bit so it can breathe." She squints for a moment longer, then says with a bit of a smug smile, "That stitching of mine is rather impressive. I'd say you're quite good at this physician business as a whole." She looks up from packing her kit, eyes narrowing. "What are you doing? Oh no, are you trying to get along with me? Do we have to get along now?" "What? No, of course not." "Thank God." "Get along? Don't be absurd." There's a rap on the courtyard gate, and Scipio steps into the garden, a coat thrown over his seaman's duds, though the heat is livid. "Good morning," Felicity calls, sliding down the bench to make room for him. "We were just about to breakfast."
"Where's Mr. Newton?" Scipio asks as he joins us.
"Still abed," I say. "How's your darling ship and your cutthroat crew?"
"The crew and the ship are both anxious to be off," Scipio says.
He takes a mug from the spot waiting for Percy and pours himself lime flower tea from the jug. "You want to leave?" I ask as Felicity looks up.
"And we'd like you to be with us," he says. We'll take you home to England, and if Thomas Pole can indeed be persuaded to exercise his influence, collect our letters of marque. We'd like to sail with some legitimacy.
Home, I ask, unable to keep my voice from pinching the words like a creased napkin. Here I was, beginning to grow accustomed to this optimistic sunlight and exile in Eden business. And now we're packing it in yet again, this time Britain-bound. Back to father.
How long before you go?
He shrugs. 4 days. Before the week's out at the latest.
Can't we stay a bit longer? I ask.
I've just suffered a grievous injury, after all.
Felicity's eyes flick to mine.
Oh, you're fine. I cleaned you up so well that not only will it heal, but the missing ear will do wonders for taming your ego.
Oh, there!
I must be sufficiently recovered because Felicity has begun to feel it appropriate to begin needling me again. Scipio surveys Felicity over the rim of his mug, then asks suddenly,
You want a job? We could use a surgeon on board. Gangrene got our last one at the end of the winter.
Hard not to see the irony in that, I remark.
Felicity laughs, though he looks earnest.
Good jape.
None intended, Scipio replies.
Your men would take a woman among them. That's hardly appropriate for either party.
Plenty of women take to sea. My mother sailed the African coast with her father when she was young. Have you heard of Grace O'Malley? Or Calico Jack? He had 2 ladies aboard with him.
And they both would have swung with him if they hadn't pled their bellies, Felicity finishes. Yes, I've heard that story.
Difference being, if you all make good on your bargain, we won't be pirates long. You wouldn't swing.
She laughs again. I can't be a surgeon. I've had no training.
You'd learn.
On you and your men.
We'll all have to strive to injure ourselves often for your educational benefit.
She looks astonished, an expression Felicity so rarely wears that it's rather alarming.
I will...
She starts, but instead of finishing, she says as she stands, I was going to make breakfast.
Scipio stands too, trailing her into the kitchen. Just think it over, Miss Montague, I hear him say as they go. You needn't decide until we reach England. The boys are useless, but I dig you on.
I would have done a dramatic drop of my face into my hands at the news that we're going home, had I not recently parted ways with a good piece of that selfsame face. I don't know what I was expecting to happen at the end of all this, but somehow it wasn't a return home. Or at least not so soon. I don't know what Percy's going to do, if he'll come with us or if he's still going to Holland. In spite of how much we've been together since we quit Venice, I haven't been well enough or alone with him long enough to have a proper talk. Scipio and Felicity make busy in the kitchen as I sit on the terracotta step into the courtyard. Truly, the only benefit of my near-death experience is that it has temporarily disqualified me from all chores. Soft conversation floats through the open window. First, just Scipio and Felicity trading light japes about women aboard a pirate ship. Then Percy's voice as he joins them. Scipio relays the same message to him as he did to us. The leaving news. My heart kicks. There are footsteps on the walk behind me, and I shuffle out of the way, but it's Percy, half-dressed and still wild-haired from bed.
Good morning, darling, I say, as he sinks down at my side, his bare toes curling around the scrubbed fingers of grass growing up between the stones. Ah, don't sit on that side of me. Can't hear anything.
It pricks a strange vein of grief inside me to say it aloud. I wonder if it will ever stop being strange, that empty whistling on one side of my head, or the way anything but conversation had face to face is near impossible to decipher. Felicity says I'll grow accustomed to it in time, though she also keeps sneaking up on my death site and scaring the shit out of me.
Forgot, sorry.
Percy slides from the step so that he's sitting in front of me instead, knees pulled up to his chest and arms looped around them. I resist the urge to scratch at the torn-up side of my face. Burns, as it turns out, get beastly itchy once the pain retreats.
Don't touch it, he says suddenly.
I'm not.
You were thinking about it.
I sit on my hands. Consider wrinkling my nose at him as well, though I'm afraid it might fell me.
This is going to significantly hinder my future romantic prospects.
Not necessarily.
It will certainly discourage initial approach. I'm going to have to start relying on nothing but my personality. Thank God my dimples survived.
Thank God, because you've nothing else in your favor. And how do you know what it looks like? You can't see it.
I have a sense, as it's my head, and I can tell it's going to be a great ugly scar no one will ever be able to look away from.
It's not.
Not what?
Not ugly. He catches my chin in his hand as I turn away from him and tips my face up.
I can feel the sun upon my skin like a second set of fingers looped with his.
He traces my jawline with his thumb, then smiles widely, his head canting to the side. You're still gorgeous, you know.
There's a clatter from the kitchen, a tin plate dropped on stone, and Percy and I both jump.
His hand falls from my face. Are you steady enough to go walking? He asks.
I've been rather shaky on my feet since I parted ways with my hearing. Apparently those two things are related in a way only Felicity understands. If we go slowly, anywhere in particular you care to walk to?
I've an idea, if you'll trust me.
I trust you, I say, and he pulls me to my feet, my hand in his.
Percy leads me on through town to the edge of the cliffs, where we take the steep, snaking path down to the beach.
We don't say much beyond the occasional good-natured moan about what a son of a bitch this mountain is going to be to climb back up. I stay on his right side, and he keeps one hand at my elbow, resting there but not quite touching, and ready to grab me if I pitch over. From a level eye with the sea, the Aegean is almost too radiant to be real, the vivid turquoise of the speckles on a robin's egg. There's not a soul about this stretch of sand but us. No one else daft enough to make the trek down the cliffs, I suppose. So Percy and I both take off our jackets and waistcoats and leave them to crease in a heap on the beach. I make a show of kicking off my shoes in a high arc and letting them lie where they land, which makes Percy laugh. He's much more civilized about pulling his off and then bundling the socks into the toes before he walks into the sea. I follow, skirting the edges of the waves and dancing out of the way each time one gets too near.
Come into the water, Percy calls from where he's standing up to his knees in the sea.
No thanks. I'm wounded, remember?
Come on, you coward. I'm not going to make you swim.
He stumbles back up the beach toward me, sand caving under his feet as the waves take it, and makes a snatch for my arm. I dodge so he gets the back of my shirt instead and drags me after him until the sea and I meet and I am forced to wet my toes. I make to wriggle from his grasp, but a wave of dizziness knocks me asunder. I stumble, but Percy catches me, his hands suddenly harboring my waist while I grab a handful of his shirt. Our faces swoop close.
Steady on, he says.
I blink hard a few times, trying to clear my head. I'm ready for these spells to be over so I can get on with being partly deaf.
Perhaps you can buy a handsome ear trumpet once you get home.
And then, this time next year, everyone will be carrying one.
As goes Henry Montagu, so goes the nation.
Now that I'm steady, I think he's going to pull away, because the last time we toppled into each other, it ended in shouting. But instead, he puts his arms around my neck, and though my vision has settled, we sway together as a wave strikes us, soaking the knees of our breeches. It's something like dancing. When I can't think of anything else, I say, "It's gorgeous here." Then immediately wince, because, oh God, have we reached such a barren spit of land in our relationship that I'm reduced to making observations about the surroundings just for conversation? And if so, I'll have to find a sharp shell upon the beach and slip my wrists right here. But Percy just smiles.
The Cyclades weren't really on our itinerary.
Oh, I think we're well off track now. We've had an adventure novel instead of a tour.
He reaches up and pushes a loose thread of my hair behind my ear. What will everyone say, do you think? We'll be the shame of our families.
Oh, I think my father holds that title. Turns out, I'm rather a bastard.
When Percy gives me a quizzical look, I supply the details of my father's abandoned French bride.
If anyone knew, he'd lose everything, I finish. The estate, the title, the money, his standing. Probably be jailed as well. Even a rumor of it would wreck him.
So what will you do? Percy asks. A flock of seagulls take flight from the beach and settle upon the sea, bobbing like sailboats upon the current as they complain to each other. I've been thinking about it a good deal in the space between Venice and Santorini. This question of what might happen if I turned up the bodies my father has buried in our garden. The damage I could do to him, fitting retribution for the years he spent beating me down. Nothing, I say, because I'm not the only one who'd have to live with those overturned graves.
So you're just going home, like nothing's changed?
Well, I was thinking, I swallow hard, I was thinking about not going back, at all, and maybe you and I could go somewhere together instead.
His eyes drop from mine. You don't have to say that.
I want to.
Wait, listen. I shouldn't have asked that of you, running away together. That was too much. Asking you to throw away your whole life on a whim like that. I just got excited that we might have similar sentiments about each other, and there might be a chance for me to not be put away and see if perhaps those sentiments might play out into something. But it's all right. I promise. I know it's too much to walk away from. It's your whole life.
But I would. For you.
You don't have to.
I want to. I mean it.
Let's run away.
He smiles, though I'm not certain he believes I'm in earnest.
All right, where will we go then?
London, maybe? Or move to the country? Live like bachelors?
Drive the local girls wild?
Something like that.
The wind catches the strand of my hair Percy pushed away and pulls it over my forehead again, right across my burns. It stings faintly.
Though I think first I should sober up a bit. Stop mucking around so much and get my head on straight.
That'd be good.
Percy smiles again and I turn my face away from his, toward the sea and the spotty fishing boats gathered at the horizon. A few tall ships with their bowsprits pointed to the Aegean, cant in the cradle of the waves.
Why have you stuck by me? I ask.
I've been such a mess for a while now, and... Holy Christ, Purse, I could hardly stand to be around myself. It's still really hard some days.
Because that's what you do when you... For your friends, he flinches a little, a crease appearing between his eyebrows, then amends. When you love someone, that's what I meant to say, when you love someone, you stand by him, even when he's being a bit of a rake.
More than a bit.
Not all the time.
For the better part of the last few years.
Perhaps, but you had...
I would have left me long ago, kicked me into a ditch and been done.
Monty.
Stopped answering the door at the very least.
Shut it, will you?
He nudges the side of my head with his nose.
Just take it.
I put my cheek to his shoulder and he rests his chin against the top of my head. We stay like that for a while, neither of us speaking. The Aegean presses us together, the water sun-warmed and soft as court velvet.
You don't have to come with me, he says quietly.
If you think you have some obligation to me because...
It's not an obligation, Purse. I love you.
It trips out of me and I can feel my neck start to burn. But I'm in this thick now, so onward I press.
I love you, but I don't know how to help you.
I still don't. I'm an emotional delinquent and I say wrong things all the time, but I want to be better for you. I promise that. It doesn't matter to me that you're ill, and it doesn't matter if I have to give up everything because you're worth it. You're worth it all because you are magnificent. You are. Magnificent and gorgeous and brilliant and kind and good, and I just... love you, Percy. I love you so damn much.
He looks down into the water, then back up at me, and it lifts my heart like a rising tide. His gaze makes me feel brave.
And I need to know, I go on. I need to know where your head's at. I don't care what the answer is. If you want me to walk away now and leave you be, I can do that. Or if you want a bachelor flat together with separate bedrooms. Or if you want...
more than that.
I know it would be hard because we're both lads and we'd be starting with bleeding nothing, but if you'll run away with me, let's run. I'm ready. He doesn't say anything for what is likely only a minute, but seems to drag across several years. His hands slide from their loop around my neck and down my arms before they finally settle upon my wrists. And it feels suddenly like he's edging away, the waves pushing us apart. Dread begins to snake through me like smoke between floorboards, because this determined avoidance of my eyes is looking like the prelude to a very kind no thanks. I missed my chance in that rain-slick alley in Venice. I brace for my heart to be shot from the sky. But then he says, "Monty, I will always care for you. I hope you know that." Perhaps if we had been more forthright with each other, or perhaps if we had trusted each other more, it could have been something sooner. But we weren't. So now we're here. Good Lord, I think he's trying to let me down gently. And instead it's like he's starting my execution by pulling out my fingernails. I'd take the bullet again over this. I'd catch that bullet with my teeth a dozen times over this. He's still not looking at me. He's staring at the ground, winding up to break my heart, and I can't stick it any longer, so I interrupt. "Just say it, Purse. Please don't drag it out. Just say that you don't want me. It's all right." "What?" He looks up. "No, no, that's not what I... I'm trying to tell you I love you, you sod." My heart takes a wild volt. "You... what?" "Damn it." Percy tips his face to the sky with a moan. "I've had this whole speech worked out in my head. I've been planning it for weeks, waiting for a moment on our own. Oh, no, did I wreck it? You completely wrecked it. I'm sorry. And it was so good. I'm so sorry. Couldn't keep your fat gob shut for 2 minutes, dear Lord. Well, that was a rubbish way to start it. I thought you were angling in the other direction, and I panicked. Yes, well, I wasn't. Yes, well, I know that now." We're both red-faced, both of us laughing, though we sober at the same time and trade a look that feels like silk against my skin. I tap his side with my elbow. "Say it anyway."
"In its entirety.
At least the important bit."
"The important bit was that if you go behind my back, I swear to God I'll skin you alive."
"I won't."
"Murder you, then alchemically raise you from the dead so I can murder you again."
"I won't, Percy. I won't. I won't. I promise you. I won't."
I put my hands upon either side of his face and pull him to me, standing on my toes so we are a breath apart.
"Now say the rest."
His face goes shy, eyes flitting down, then back up to mine. "Yes, Monty," he says, and he smiles on my name. "I love you, and I want to be with you."
"And you, Percy," I return, touching my nose to his, "are the great love of my life. Whatever happens from here, I hope that's the one thing that never changes."
My hands are upon his face, mirror to the spot where I'll carry red, puckered scars for the rest of my life. In his gaze, they seem to matter less. We are not broken things, neither of us. We are cracked pottery, mended with lacquer and flakes of gold, whole as we are, complete unto each other. Complete and worthy and so very loved.
"May I kiss you?" I ask.
"That's a bloody lootly you may," he says.
And so I do.
Dear Father, as I write these words, I am sitting at the window of a small flat on a small island that is decidedly off the route you planned for me, having been dropped here by a group of pirates, though this lot are more aptly termed aspiring privateers, after fleeing Venice as a fugitive. I'm not certain which of those will most horrify you. If you desire to be further scandalized, proceed. In the courtyard below me is Felicity, and she is looking rather happy, and here I was starting to believe her brow was permanently furrowed. And beside me is Percy. And were I not entirely occupied with this missive, and he with his indestructible fiddle, I would be holding his hand. Perhaps even a bit more than hand-holding. I will absolutely be scratching that part out before I send this, but I needed to put it down in writing. I still can't believe it's real. I have become the Grand Tour horror story, the cautionary tale for parents before they send their boys off to the continent. I have lost my bear leader. I have been kidnapped by pirates and attacked by highwaymen.
I have humiliated your good name before the French court, run naked through the gardens at Versailles, turned up corpses, and sunk an island, a whole bloody island. You must be at least somewhat impressed by all that. Also, I'm now short one ear. I'm certain it will grow back, though Felicity seems less confident. But at least I didn't gamble away my fortune, run away with a French girl, and then abandon her. Now, that would be scandalous. You would hardly recognize me if I returned home, which I don't intend to do. Not now, anyway. Perhaps not ever. Percy and I will be staying in the Cyclades for the time being, and who knows where we'll go from here or what sort of life we will make, but we will make it together on our own terms, both of us. The first step will be unlearning all the things you've taught me for my entire life. It took several thousand miles for me to begin believing that I am better than the worst things I've done. But I'm starting. Our pirate friends depart shortly, and I need to hand this letter off before they do. I'll send word once we're settled, and perhaps you and I will someday see each other again. But for now, know that we are safe and well, and know that I am happy. For perhaps the first time in my life. Everything before is all shriveled and pale in comparison to this. And I don't care what you say, or what you think, or what I'm giving up. The goblin can have it all. From here on out, I intend to have a damn good life. It will not be easy, but it will be good. And now Percy has his arms around me, and Santorini and the sea are spread like a feast before us, and there is sky all the way to the horizon. And what a sky it is. Henry Montagu. This is Christian Coulson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue by Mackenzie Lee. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Copyright 2017 by Mackenzie Van Engelenhoven. Production copyright 2017 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.